Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 4, text 2. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu sakale neha mahata yoga nashtav parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demoniac persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. You okay there? I'm going too slowly for you. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demoniac because demons do not believe in God but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English as it is received by the parampara, disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. First word of this verse is evam, which means thus. So this means that it is spoken in relation to the previous verse, which is, does anyone know? Any shloka experts around here? Imang vivasvate yogam proktavan ahamavyayam vivasvan anave praha mandur ikshvakave bravit evam. So this knowledge, Lord Krishna says, I first spoke to Vivasvan, the sun god, who spoke it to Manu, the father of mankind, who spoke it to Ikshvaku, his son. And evam, in this way, you know, Krishna is saying, I'm beginning a list. Thus, so many kings in a parampara, a chain, they understood this knowledge. Now that Krishna spoke to Vivasvan, this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that means it may have been somewhat, it must have been somewhat differently presented, because here Krishna is presenting this knowledge to Arjuna in the context of Arjuna's not wanting to fight and Krishna wanting to convince him to do so. But we don't have any information of Krishna speaking to Vivasvan in that context. And even you see here, yoga nashta parantapa. Krishna is addressing Arjuna as parantapa, subduer of foes. So Vivasvan, he's also Kshatriya, so he could be addressed by the same name. But it appears that even the shloka structure would not have been exactly the same, but the knowledge was the same. Because it is this knowledge that is avyaya. That means it is not expended, it doesn't diminish. This knowledge is eternal. So it may have been spoken in a somewhat different context, but the same knowledge was spoken, which is the essence of all the Upanishads, which is the essence of all the knowledge in the Vedas, which is Bhagavad Gita. Now Krishna, in the previous verse, has said that I spoke this knowledge, which is this imperishable knowledge. I think that's the word Prabhupada uses. This imperishable knowledge. Yeah, imperishable science of yoga. Now, in this verse, Krishna says, yoga nashta. In the previous verse, he says the knowledge is imperishable. And in this verse, he says, yoga nashta. Nashta means spoiled. That's the usual. Spoiled or destroyed. Here, Prabhupada translates this as scattered. Because the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita can never actually be lost or spoiled. But just like we have that example, that Maya covers the vision of the conditioned souls, covers the vision of the Supreme Lord, just like a cloud covers the sun. A cloud is very insignificant in relationship to the sun, but from the position of the conditioned souls, from their vantage point, the sun is covered by a small, insignificant cloud. So Krishna and knowledge of Krishna is imperishable and unlimited. But the conditioned souls, due to our not wanting to understand Krishna, become covered by the very small cloud of Maya. Maya is very insignificant in relationship to Krishna. But because the conditioned souls don't want to know Krishna, therefore knowledge of Krishna is not manifest to them. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in everyone's heart. For one who has the vision to see, Krishna can be seen everywhere. But we don't want to see Krishna. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. Mudho yang nabijanati loko mama jamavyayam. Krishna says, I'm not manifest to the foolish, unintelligent, mudha. Mudha, this word indicates not only foolishness, but a kind of stubborn, willing foolishness. Or, as Prabhupada used to say, rascaldom. That one deliberately rejects Krishna. And therefore Krishna does not reveal himself. You don't want to see me? All right. You don't want? All right. Okay. That's your choice. Krishna, he gives some freedom to the living beings. But it's Krishna allows the conditioned living souls to forget him. If they want, he gives them the opportunity to forget him. He even, in one sense, helps them in their forgetfulness. Sarvasya chahang hridi sannivishto matav smritya jnanam apohanam cha. From me, Krishna says, come memory, knowledge and forgetfulness. I'm in everyone's heart. So if we want to forget Krishna, Krishna actually helps us. But on the other side, Krishna doesn't actually want us to forget him. So from the other side, he's making some endeavor. Krishna is always trying to help the conditioned souls to remember him, but he doesn't force them. So Krishna explains here at the beginning of this fourth chapter about what he is doing to help us. Sometimes people say, what is God doing to help me? And they think that, well, God should give me some more money. He should cure my backache. He should get me a visa for America and all these kind of things that God is supposed to do. But God, he knows what is best for us, and therefore he's always trying to bring us back to him, and therefore his most important contribution is to give us the knowledge by which we can remember him. Why are we here in this material world? What is the root cause of our incarceration in this material world? That is ignorance. And then we say, what is the root cause of that ignorance? That is envy of Krishna. So the ignorance That is to be offset by knowledge. So Krishna gives knowledge in the form of the Vedic literatures, which actually they emanate. The Vedas emanate from the breathing of Narayana, and he imparts that knowledge. Sri Krishna imparts the knowledge of the Vedas to Brahma, and this way we have disciplic succession coming from Brahma. And also Lord Krishna in various ways speaks to Lakshmi, Lord Shiva and Sanat Kumar. And in this way there are various paramparas of knowledge coming in the world. Knowledge of the Vedas, knowledge of Krishna. Now that knowledge is given by Krishna, and that is passed down in parampara. Now we may wonder how this knowledge, which is completely pure, Krishna says it becomes dissipated. How does that be? How does this knowledge of Krishna, this knowledge which is imperishable, then how does it get spoiled? What happens? How is that possible? That knowledge which is completely pure, how is it possible? We see the names of parampara. Here we have parampara mentioned, Vivasvan, Manu, Ikshvaku. That's not one of the four sampradayas that are mentioned for Kali Yuga. But this is another parampara. What happens is, how is it possible that these great, this parampara of great acharyas, great personalities, how does it become distorted? It only takes one person to change something. And then the parampara message is altered. We've factually seen that in recent times, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came, he is Krishna, he spoke the same message of Bhagavad Gita with the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, with the practical means to obtain the gift of Bhagavad Gita, which is love of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, always think of me, become my devotee. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the actual means to not only attain that knowledge, but to act on the platform of transcendental knowledge, which is love of Krishna, by taking part in the Sankirtan movement. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita enriched, swabhakti shriyam, enriched with devotion to himself. But as is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that just after the departure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from this world, that various persons, taking advantage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's incarnation, they declared themselves incarnation of God, or declared someone else an incarnation of God. And just like Krishna says here, that the parampara in course of time became lost. Now, this parampara that Krishna is speaking of, this Prabhupada analyzes in the purport of the previous verse, that this knowledge of Gita was spoken to Vivasvan at least 120, what's that, million, 400,000 years ago. And then Krishna spoke to Arjuna about 5,000 years ago. So it's like that. More than 120 million years ago, Krishna spoke to Vivasvan. And then Krishna thought, well, now the knowledge has got lost. Now I have to repeat it. But we find that practically immediately after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, within a very short time, the parampara from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became practically lost. There were acharyas after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There were the six Goswamis, Narottam Das Thakur, then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhushan. But practically shortly after the time of Narottam Das Thakur, there wasn't much vigorous preaching of Krishna consciousness, and many upper sampradayas or unauthorized groups came into existence or became prominent. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he listed 13 of those upper sampradayas which were prominent at that time, he, let's see how many I can remember, Aul, Bal, Karta Bhaja, Nera, Jat Gosai, Shaki Beki, Sahajiya, Churadari, then Shaki Beki, what others? Goranga Nagari, there's, anyway, there's 10 of them. There are these various upper sampradayas who purported to represent the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but in various ways were deviated from that. So, just some example, the Jat Gosais. They were, or Jati Gosai, either way you can say. Jat Gosai or Jati Gosai. Caste Goswamis, in English it's translated as. They would say that simply because of their birth, they were supposed to be descended, similarly descended from great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or from Nityananda Prabhu, or Advaita Prabhu, the Supreme Lord Himself. So on account of being the disciplic descendants of these great personalities, they claimed a monopoly on guruship. Because in India the caste system is very strong, and it's just, or was at that time, until quite recently. So everyone had a caste. If someone is born in the family of a potter, a boy born in the family of potter, then he's trained up as a potter, and he becomes a potter. Someone who's Baba caste, he becomes a Baba. Then business class, Gupta, something like that. They become shopkeepers, generally, or something like that. So there's also the guru caste. If your father's a guru, you become a guru. That was the idea, that instead of seeing the qualification to be a guru, they would simply become a guru because it's our family right to be a guru. So there was Jat Gosai, then Smarta. Smarta means followers of the Smriti principles given in the Vedas. And generally they're not very much like Vaishnavas at all. But in Bengal, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult was very strong, so the Smartas means persons who are addicted to performing ritualistic activities generally with the aim of getting a higher birth in the next life, and maybe sometime later, liberation. So they were also, the Smartas in Bengal mixed up some practices of Vaishnavism. And they might in some way claim to be Vaishnavas, but ultimately they adhered to the Smarta doctrine. And the Vaishnav cult, or the Vaishnav parampara in Bengal, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, became very much influenced by Smarta practices. And even the whole idea of these Jati Gosais, which is against the principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that was very much influenced by this Smarta understanding that one has a particular qualification according to birth. The idea is that if you're born in a low caste family, that's born due to your sinful activities in a previous life, so you have to do some pious activities in this life, and then you can get born in a higher family in the next life. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already rejected that. Nicha jati nahi krishna bhajanaya yoga, shatkul bipra nahi bhajanaya yoga, je bhaje she baro abhaktahino cha krishna bhajane nahik jatkul adi bicha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said that one who is born in a low caste family is not debarred from the activities of Krishna consciousness. And simply to be born in a high family, so-called, is no qualification. Whoever worships Krishna is glorious, and whoever doesn't is simply useless. This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further said that dinere adhik daya kare bhagavan kulin dhani pandit boro abhiman. He said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that actually Bhagavan, Krishna, he is more favorable to the fallen, because people who are born in high caste families, or who are very great scholars of Vedic literatures, or who are very rich, they tend to be puffed up, which is a disqualification to understand Krishna. So in the Vaishnava Sampradaya in Bengal got very much mixed up with it merged into the general Hinduism, in which the caste system is there. And although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had accepted Haridasa Thakur, who was outside, who was expelled from the caste, not expelled from the caste system, he was supposed to be a Muslim birth, so he wasn't allowed within Hindu society. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as his topmost acharya, Nama Acharya, totally going against social convention. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't accept this. Well, to some extent he went along with social conventions, but philosophically he didn't accept the caste system, but it became completely accepted again in Vaishnava society. Then there are other more weird manifestations of so-called Vaishnavism. Shaki Beki, in which men would dress as women, thinking that Krishna loves the gopis. So let me become a gopi. They talk like this, pretending to be women. And they'd be very shy like women. And traditionally in Hindu, they'd put the red marking on their feet like women, all these different things. And even some of them did their job so well that, because for 4 days a month, when women are what in ISKCON is called off the altar, traditionally, women, they'd be hidden away. They wouldn't be seen. They'd go on holiday for 4 days. So these men would be away for 4 days every month. Isn't that ridiculous? They were imitating being gopis, as if Krishna would be attracted to their... I mean, maybe it's a forerunner of the gay movement or something, that gays should be accepted in Vaishnava society because Saki Bakis or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just these are genuine historical examples of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya became infiltrated or practically taken over by persons who deviated from the parampara. There was another group, the Neraneri. This means that it was formerly a Buddhist sect, that they were so degraded that when Buddhists in Bengal, they all got reconverted back to Hinduism, that they were left out because the Hindus didn't want, you know, just too fallen. But then, very degraded in their habits. There's no discrimination in sex or any such thing. So, later on, they were accepted as part of the Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya, but they didn't change their habits. So they could become part of mainstream society. They were accepted into Hindu society, but they remained very fallen in their habits. So it was considered that, well, it's being very merciful to them. The Gauriya Vaishnava culture is very merciful, so they should be allowed to come in. But they didn't change their habits, so they remained actually outside the pale or outside the actual Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very merciful to the fallen, the idea was that after taking to his cult, that you don't remain fallen, that you take up spiritual life very purely. That was the idea. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called Patita Pavana. He purifies the fallen. So it's not that anyone is rejected for being fallen, but it's not that they should remain fallen after coming into Krishna consciousness. The idea is that those who are fallen, they should come up to a very high class standard of behavior. So like this, there were various upper sampradayas. Many of them were mixed up with Mayavad. There were the Bowels, who were like some kind of wandering minstrels who had these various kinds of enigmatic songs. Enigmatic, you got that word? You have that word in Croatian? Okay, yeah, it's probably the same word. These kind of enigmatic songs. But ultimately they were just another kind of impersonalist. So like this, there were various deviations from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya. Another one that's very interesting, Gauranga Nagari, who their temples are kept nicely, and they're vegetarian, which is unusual for Vaishnavas in Bengal, because most so-called Vaishnavas are fish eaters. There are many rivers and ponds, and fish is cheap, easily available, and it's vegetarian. Right? It's vegetarian. Sometimes if you ask Bengali Vaishnavas, why are you eating fish? It's vegetarian. It's Ganga phal, fruit of the Ganga. Just like fruit goes on a tree, so fish go in the river. It's vegetarian. There's one upper sampradaya, Kala Chandi. They offer fish with tulsi to the deity. But most so-called Vaishnavas in Bengal, they understand there's something not quite right about that. So they have separate kitchens. One kitchen for offering to the deities, everything purely vegetarian. And another kitchen for cooking fish. So they know there's something wrong, that this Ganga phal, when Krishna says, Patrang Pushpang Phalam, it doesn't mean Ganga phal, like, it doesn't mean fish. They know there's something wrong, therefore they have a separate kitchen. There's one for Thakurji and one for keeping healthy. So these kind of things are going on. Anyway, the Gauranga Nagaris, they were and are vegetarian and famous for doing very nice kirtan. But one thing they had wrong, if you think about it, it may not seem to be very wrong. If you go to their temples, you'll find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Vishnu Priya. Nothing wrong with that, is there? Is there or not? What do you think? Well, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay. This Bhaktivinoda Thakur also established Gaura Vishnu Priya at the Jogapith in Mayapur. The only thing is they have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with a flute. We don't find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela that he holds a flute. But they have him holding a flute with the idea that he, just like Krishna is the enjoyer of the young women of Vrindavan, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the enjoyer of the young women of Nadia. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that this is actually breaking the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who in this incarnation has come as in the mood of a servant of Krishna. He's not taking the mood of the enjoyer. Now, one upper sampradaya not mentioned in this list of 13, it came a little later. I had a little discussion or disagreement with Sahotra Swami about this once, because he made this book about the upper sampradayas, and he asked me some things, because I had a lot of personal experience of this. So he thought that the 13 were like some kind of generic forms, and there's only 13 upper sampradaya, like it's an upper sampradaya tattva or something like that. But I disagree that there can be so many. There can be so many different varieties. I guess you could put all different kinds of upper sampradayas you could try and squeeze it into one of the 13 groups. But anyway, this after Bhaktivinoda Thakur compiled this list, it was actually given by one Tota Babaji. Tota kahe e tera shanga nahi kari. Tota Babaji says, I don't associate with these 13. There came another group, which was actually, this is very interesting, it was started by one Radharaman Charandas Babaji, who was at least superficially a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, or grand disciple. Now, this sampradaya, in many ways, it did many good things. They took over the worship and revived the worship in many neglected or abandoned holy places of the Gaurya Vaishnav sampradaya. If you go to Ek Chakra, or the birthplace of Narottam Das, or the birthplace of Lokanath Goswami, or the Haridas Thakur Samadhi, so these places is taken over by his upper sampradaya. And they wrote many books, they translated Hari Bhakti Vilas in so many books. So they did many good things, apparently. But there's one major mistake, at least one major mistake in their sampradaya, for which Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wholly rejected them.
that Radharaman Charandas Babaji, as he was called for short, he came up with this speculation that the Hare Krishna mantra, actually he didn't start this, but he said that the Hare Krishna mantra should not be chanted loudly. Now there are various people who say it shouldn't be chanted loudly, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to deliver the whole world by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra loudly. So he made up, actually he said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him, he got some mantra. He said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him, where did you get this mantra from? He said, I got it in a dream. What is that mantra? Bhajanitai Gaur Radhe Sham, and the rest. You know what I'm saying? You probably know it if you've been to Krishna Balaram Mandir. They're going on behind. They have their ashram right behind the guest house. So they have their imaginative mantra, which he says that I received it in a dream. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur rejected this, that you cannot make up a mantra. You cannot just make up something. We have to take knowledge as it is received in parampara. So there are other aberrations also. Just like they say that Nitai is Radharani. And also their followers, some of them follow this Sakhi Beki, dressing as women and all this. So these opposite, what happened? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, first of all, pointed out that these people, they're not really Vaishnavas at all. And Bhaktisthan Saraswati, he went to war against them. And particularly when he, as a young man, when Siddhanta Saraswati was in Puri, he was very strongly preaching against this Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham. But all the public opinion, it all went against him. He said, how can you say? You see, he's just a young man. At that time he was in his 20s. And he was preaching against this respected Charandas Babaji, who had followers all throughout Orissa and Bengal, and many respected, educated people had become his followers. But Bhaktisthan Saraswati, that was before he took sannyas, he was preaching very strongly against this. This is all rascaldom. How can you introduce this? It's against the parampara. This is bogus. Destroying the actual teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But most people, they couldn't accept this. He's a very respectable person, Charandas Babaji, and he's a Vaishnava, he wears tilak, and he gets up in the morning and does his chanting. He has many followers, he's a big guru. What's wrong with him? So Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, he was preaching against this, but actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur, seeing the whole public opinion going against him, he sent Siddhanta Saraswati to Mayapur. You go and look after the temple in Mayapur. So at that time, Siddhanta Saraswati sat down and he took a vow to chant the holy names. Now I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. I'm fed up of all these people. I'm just going to sit here and chant Hare Krishna a billion times. So that means he was chanting 3 times 64 rounds every day for just over 9 years. And sometimes he was called out to various functions. One time he was called to a Vaishnav function. Generally the people didn't want him to speak, because as soon as he spoke, he would speak the truth. And most people, even the name of being Vaishnavs, they do not like to hear the truth. They would not like to hear it because they're comfortable with their mixed up version of Vaishnavism, in which we pretend to be Vaishnavs, but actually totally materialistic and totally going on with material life, but some kind of pretense of Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism mixed up just like with this Sakhi Beki doctrine, or mixed up with Smarta, Mayavad, or mixed up with various speculations which were not actually given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Siddhanta Saraswati would come and speak what is the actual fact, the actual teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they would immediately reject. Oh, you're not a Vaishnav. Why are you speaking against these respected Vaishnavs? They would not try to understand the issue. What is the philosophical point? Or they would discuss some philosophy, but then when they'd get defeated, then they'd say, well, you know, he's just a young boy. Get him out of here. He's an offender to Vaishnavs. How can he criticize these people? So without trying to understand the issue, because they had a personal agenda that these caste Goswamis, it was their family business. Who should disturb our family business? Our family business is to collect disciples. You see, my father had disciples, and my father's disciples' children, they're my disciples, and my disciples' children will be my children's disciples. This has been going on for hundreds of years. And who is this Siddhant Saraswati to come and say anything against us? So in this way, the parampara was lost. Because instead of trying to understand what is the truth of the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how one has to have full absorption in Krishna, based on parampara means a parampara, a disciplic succession of knowledge, based on shastric understanding, then people had instead substituted their own sentimental ideas, speculation, and many times it was for their own sense gratification and for their own convenience also. Like the caste Goswamis, why should they want to accept Siddhanta Saraswati's version that anyone can be a guru, even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said so? But why should they want to accept that? They have a comfortable life. They don't have to do very much. They simply go from place to place and give blessings to people. And they may have to, you know, say a little something about it. They have to. It's their family business, that just like a potter's son has to learn to make pots, so a caste Goswami's son has to learn how to do a little kirtan, sing a few songs, speak a little bit about Krishna. He has to play the part of a guru and give blessings. And they even had, it was all worked out that to call the guru to a marriage, there was a fixed rate you had to pay. And if you want him to visit your home, there was a fixed, anyway, you had your fixed tax for the year. That was like the minimum for a disciple. And then if you want him to actually bless your home by stepping in it, there was an extra tax, and they had people going around like tax collectors. And if you want to visit them, whenever your son got married, then it was compulsory, you had to call the guru. So he would come, and there's a rate for that. So it was all well structured and well organized. The guru will come with his nice tilak. I've seen actually some of these Babaji's putting on tilak. They don't have much to do all day. So I actually saw that it took him 45 minutes to put on his tilak. Very beautifully. Very precisely. In various ways, the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been spoiled by materialistic people posing as devotees. And most people couldn't recognize the difference. They couldn't see what is real and what is unreal, because they'd become so used to what is unreal being presented as real that they took the unreal to be real and the real to be unreal. That's called Maya, isn't it? Maya means to accept that which is unreal to be real and that which is real to be unreal. I had this experience. I was traveling several years in Bangladesh, so I got a lot of on-the-spot insights into all this. That we would go around from village, Hindu village. Hindu village in Bangladesh mostly means Gauriya Vaishnav, but upper sampradaya. Means, just like in some parts of India you find that the worship of Sitaram is very prominent. In other parts you find the worship of Murugan, or that means Kartikeya, is very prominent. In other parts Ganesh, or in other parts Durga. So in East Bengal or Bangladesh, mostly the Hindus there, they are followers of Radha Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult with kirtan. So we would go around and we'd have our kirtan with all us white elephants, dancing and chanting, and people would come in their thousands to see, and we'd show the film of temples all over the world, and people would become very inspired, and they became inspired to follow their own culture more. That now, oh yes, you see, the Westerners are becoming, they're following our culture, so we should do also more. But what happened is, because they thought, now we should follow our Vaishnavism. So they took up what they thought to be Vaishnavism more. That means that they'd hold their festivals and their kirtans. Just like you have Nam Yagya here. Actually, any time you have a kirtan, it's a Nam Yagya. It's not just when you put a notice on what you're going to have 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock tonight, Nam Yagya. It doesn't mean because we call it a Nam Yagya that any kirtan is not a Nam Yagya. Any kirtan is a Nam Yagya. But specifically in Bengal, Nam Yagya means they, traditionally in the villages, or in the towns also, the Hindus would come together and they'd organize for it would be Ashtapraha, that means one day, at least a minimum for one day, sometimes 3 days, sometimes 7 days, non-stop kirtan. And different groups would, from different villages, they'd chant, usually for 1.5 or 3 hours at a time, one group would chant, and then another group would come on, then another group would come on, another group would come. But eventually what happened, because to find so many people to do the kirtan is not so easy, so there were professional bands who, they're just like you have, you know, like the Rolling Stones and all that kind of thing in the West. So they have professional bands in Bengal who go around and they sing, and they become popular according to the degree of expertise in singing and the ability to entertain. So kirtan becomes a show for entertainment, and very expert musically, you know, all the different mridanga beats, and then they have to show how they're feeling ecstasy while they're singing. And the whole idea is that that Mahaprabhu's cult is full of bliss, ananda. So actually people aren't feeling the bliss of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult because they're smoking and eating fish and all these things. But there's a feeling that we should be blissful. So there's a whole show of being very blissful in the kirtan. And at the beginning I saw once one man who was going around putting this chandan, the sandalwood paste, on all the different people, and then he put it on one man who then fainted on the spot, and all the people, it's just a complete drama. And they're all trying to pick him up and he's falling again on the ground. This is normal sahajya behavior in Bangladesh. Then eventually they got him up, and then he put sandalwood paste on someone else, and then that person collapsed, and they went through the whole drama. Just a big show. And the idea, and people, the caste Goswamis would go around and give lectures on Bhagavatam. Bhagavat Saptaha, you've heard of that. So who's going to come and listen for 7 days to Bhagavatam? It means they do morning and evening. Who's going to come and, I mean, the thing is you have to give a donation to the speaker. So the speaker, he wants to make sure that the people are satisfied. So they give a good donation. So people are not like Maharaj Parikshit. So they come and he tells stories from Bhagavatam, tells a few jokes, throws in a few jokes and makes it very entertaining. And at the end he tells them, at the end when it's all over 7 days, he tells them, quotes some shlokas, how it's good to give donations to people who speak on the Bhagavatam and all these kind of things. And then he gives donations. Usually because in the Shastra it said that you should give gifts like umbrellas and shoes, they get all, you know, lots and lots of umbrellas and shoes, which aren't so useful to them. So they just go back to the shop, sell them wholesale, and they get some money like that. All these things are going. I saw one, this is a little bit off the subject. Once I went to meet one of the Shankaracharyas in South India, had some work with him. So I was waiting to see him, and he was waiting, and there was a coconut shop outside, because everyone would come, buy a coconut, offer it to him. And so after some time there's a big pile of coconuts. So the brahmachari and the mutt would go and sell them to the shop outside again. And they'd just be recycled. Like there's the same coconuts. So these things are going on. Anyway, this whole idea in Bengali Vaishnavism was that it should be ananda. That's the whole. When we hear the lecture, it should be ananda. And they would measure the speaker, how good he is, by how entertaining he is. And the kirtan, by, you know, how much bliss we got from hearing it, and how much show. And then recently they started, recently means about 20 years ago, they started introducing a new entertaining factor into the professional kirtan groups. Can you guess what? Young ladies, which was not thinkable before, but then after some... I mean, that's very entertaining. You have nice young ladies coming, and singing very sweetly and coming to the crowd like this. And there are so many things, because it said that you should serve the Vaishnavas, give them what they like. So at the end of their three-hour stint, these people, they've been on the stage singing for 3 hours, so... And it's a long time without smoking, so the widows would be at the back waiting to serve them with biri seva. So they can... And if the next group comes late, they can't stop the kirtan, so they become very upset. So why aren't they coming? So our time's up, why aren't they coming? And one person will be singing, the other one will be out the back shouting at the other group, come on, get on stage, quick, we want to get off. But... So we were going around and people were getting inspired in Krishna consciousness, but they were becoming inspired to take to Krishna consciousness like this because they think this is what bhakti is. And I even remember on our traveling Sankirtan party, I was talking to one of our initiated brahmacharis and I was talking about how, you know, all these people are eating fish. And he said, what's wrong with eating fish? He was initiated in ISKCON. And what do you mean, what's wrong with eating fish? And he said, well, what do you mean by saying fish? I mean, I'm from a Vaishnav village. They're all Vaishnavs. They all chant Hare Krishna before you ever chanted Hare Krishna. They all wear tilak. They all have kunti mala. They all have japa mala. And they all eat fish. What's wrong with it? Our guru eats fish. What's wrong? So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching in this kind of atmosphere. And he was preaching very strongly because people... They couldn't understand. Their understanding of Vaishnavism had been what they saw, what had been presented to them since their very birth. They thought, well, we know what Vaishnavism is. Who is this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to tell us? We know what it is. We don't need him to tell us. We are Vaishnavas from birth. So he fought very strongly to establish that what is the actual parampara message? Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yogam shikshartam eka purusha parana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shri Radhari Kripambate yastamahang prapadye. Savabhombhata Acharya made this prayer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you are the Supreme Lord, come to teach bhakti to himself on the basis of knowledge and renunciation. So knowledge and these are essential in bhakti. Bhakti ultimately means feelings for Krishna, but those feelings, if they're not accompanied by knowledge and renunciation, if simply there is feelings, then this is what is called sahajya. Sahaj means that which is very easy. So if we think that we shall very easily take to Krishna consciousness without any proper knowledge or renunciation, then that is what is called sahajya. But people at that time, they thought that why is he telling that you don't have to eat fish, you have to lead a pure life, because we never saw such a thing. We've been Vaishnava. Why is he trying to make it so difficult? And why is he saying that we have to understand the philosophy and understand all these points? What's wrong with our gurus? We've been following them for so many generations. So it was a great fight for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I mean, literally he had to fight. People wanted to kill him because he was speaking the truth that these people who are posing as gurus, they're simply cheating you. They're saying that so many things, but they're not speaking the message of parampara. They're not actually followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They may say the name of Chaitanya, they even sing Nitai Gaur. They may sing the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but by either or both practice and precept, they are actually deviated from the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, by following such gurus, you may think that you are a Vaishnav, and it may seem in very various ways to be like that of a Vaishnav, but you don't actually get the result of being a Vaishnav, which is purification of heart. in which one develops detachment from material attraction and attachment to Krishna. Now, the Sahajiyas, they couldn't understand this because they thought, well, we're attached to Krishna. We hear about Rasli. We're always hearing about Krishna's pastimes and this and that. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would emphasize that before one can understand Krishna's pastimes, especially his very intimate pastimes, we have to understand the basic philosophy of who is Krishna, who are we, what is our relationship. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, there is sambandha abhideya prayoja. Sambandha means to understand what is our relationship with Krishna, according to Shastra, Bhagavad Gita as it is. Abhideya means to act on that platform, to follow the rules and regulations of devotional services given by Rupa Goswami. And then after that comes prayojan, or actually attaining the result of following this process of purification, which means to enter into the pastimes of Krishna. One cannot artificially enter into the pastimes of Krishna simply by imagining oneself to do so. There's a kind of these Babajis, they had some kind of... Babajis and Khas Goswamis also, they gave this Manjari Sadhana, in which one imagines oneself to be a Manjari, namely a young gopi. And by they think that by simply imagining oneself to be such, and meditating on oneself as such, that you could, by doing so, you become a gopi. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he says, first of all, there has to be purification. That one cannot understand his position on the liberated platform without first becoming liberated from material attraction. He gave the result, he gave the example. Anyway, it's a little difficult to understand, so I won't give it. It's of an unripe jackfruit, but if you don't know what a jackfruit is, it won't help you very much. So, this Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, he would say, Shuti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra Vithingvina, Aikantaki Hare Bhakti, Utpate Yaiva Kalpate. That devotional service to the Lord, which is not firmly based on Shastra, Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Pancharatra, in the Vaishnava cult, we follow the Vedas, Shruti and Smriti and Puranas, these are all Vedic literature can be called, and Pancharatra, specific texts for Vaishnavas, revealed scriptures for Vaishnavas. So if one attempts to perform devotional service but does not strictly follow the Shastra, then that so-called bhakti may appear to be bhakti, but it is actually a disturbance on the path of bhakti. Not only is it not bhakti, but it is a disturbance in the path of bhakti. Because people without much knowledge, they can't distinguish between what is the genuine path and that which isn't. So these are some of the problems, and it happens all the time. You see here, Krishna says this knowledge became dissipated after millions of years, but it seems in Kali Yuga things move quickly. So after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, within a few generations, the actual knowledge of Krishna consciousness became dissipated. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and especially Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, fought to re-establish what are the actual teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that seems inevitable, especially in Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga means people are of bad intelligence. Manda sumanda mati. Bad and very bad attitude or way of thinking. People in Kali Yuga are basically, means we're all basically rascals. Of course, there is a great quality of Kali Yuga that by Krishna Sankirtan, one can easily be delivered from material existence. But that Sankirtan has to be done according to the parampara system. Otherwise, you see this Hari, you say, well, we're chanting Hare Krishna. The holy name is all purifying. So what's wrong with, you know, what's wrong with eating fish? Because the holy name, is God so, God is very merciful. Will He not be merciful to us for a small thing like eating fish? They have some arguments, some kind of philosophy, but bad philosophy. So in Kali Yuga, the tendency to deteriorate is very strong and happens very quickly, and people are very dull-headed, especially in understanding spiritual subject matters, as is very easily apparent from the plethora of bogus gurus and even the so-called established religions, bona fide religions, which we're so eager to identify ourselves with. They're deviated from religious principles or even from very basic understanding of the facts of spiritual life. What is the difference between the soul and the body? The first teaching of Bhagavad Gita. The established religions, even the very first teaching, how many of them can even begin to answer this question? And even though they purport to worship God, who has got knowledge of God? They don't know, actually, who is God? What does He do? That God is a person. This, even if it's accepted, which it will hardly be in the so-called established religions, then there's no specific knowledge of God. Therefore, that I was quoting yesterday, that prithivite jato kata dharma nama chale bhagavata kahitaha paripurna chale, that whatever is going on in religion, in the name of religion in the world, is simply cheating. Everything except Bhagavad Dharma, pure Bhagavad Dharma. So, although there is there's often a tendency within our movement to be very, what's that word where we mix up with episcopal or something like that? We mix up ecumenical. We mix up with different religious groups and this and that. And there may be some reason, or there may be some good in doing that. But we should understand that this Krishna consciousness as received in Parampara through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through Prabhupada, this is the message of the Absolute Truth. And it is clearly distinguished from other forms of religion that have no idea of actually who is God or how to approach Him. As Prabhupada said very simply, that others may talk of God, but we know who God is. We know His name, we know His father's name, we know His address, we know His phone number. What's His phone number? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Are you there? Yes, Krishna's there. If we keep a clear line, the line has to be clear. That means we should put no obstruction in the line. The obstruction means our own perverted or polluted desires not to surrender to Krishna. So, in Kali Yuga, that tendency is very strong, that whatever is pure, people, they want to mix that up with their own materialistic desires or present themselves as being very spiritual without being spiritual. And people are confused as to what spiritual means. Nowadays, the word guru in general usage, maybe outside of ISKCON, but in general usage, it means some kind of smart guy who's good at, maybe on TV programs, and they talk about, some kind of how to get healthy, how to be fit, how to breathe, and how to do some kind of meditation, and how to live in the modern world, very smart, how to overcome depression, how to get ahead in life, all these kind of, this is called a guru. So there's much misunderstanding about what actually spiritual life is. And the difference between Prabhupada and so many Indian gurus, and between so many Western gurus, and between so many propounders of religion, is that Prabhupada brought the absolute truth as it is received in Parampara. And it was he very much wanted to show that by presenting his books with the original Sanskrit, translation word by word, and then commentaries with so many quotes from Shastra to show that this is based on the ancient tradition. It's not something that Prabhupada has made up. And he was willing to meet with people and discuss with them and establish how Krishna consciousness is the topmost yoga system. This is, in the words of the Bhagavatam, reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. So Prabhupada has brought that, but again, that we have to be very careful of the tendency to introduce other things which are not actually the parampara message. Just like you see, I was giving some examples of how in Bengal, people, they introduced, they took the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they mixed it up with what they considered to be religion or some mental speculation or something watered down. Gaurangir Mot Shankara Path, there's one in Bengal that we chant Hare Krishna, that's Gauranga's path, but our ultimate aim is Shankara Mot, the Shankaracharya's theory. So we'll chant Hare Krishna and merge in the impersonal Brahman. And in their temples, you go in their temple, it's a very nice altar. You know what's on the altar? Nothing. Nishta. Nishta means nothing. The altar is nothing because the ultimate goal is nothing. So that tendency is there, that we don't really want to surrender to Krishna, which is Krishna's message in Parampara. What is the message that Krishna is giving? To surrender to Him. So we mix it up with our materialistic ideas of religion or what we think is nice, instead of taking from Krishna, hearing from Krishna and following Krishna's message. We think that, well, Krishna gave something good and I also know something good, so let's mix it all up a little bit. Or Krishna gave us something good and it's very good, but we'll follow it a little later. If you want to follow it, that's all right, but we have our own way of following it. And so many different things. And then very people say, well, you have to be practical, you see. You have to be practical, so it's very practical that the river is flowing past our house. So if you get free food, which is very tasty and very nourishing, then why not take it? It's practical, isn't it? So in the name of being practical, we may introduce so many contaminations. In the name of integrating with the rest of society, we may introduce so many contaminations. So it's not that, it's impossible that after Prabhupada this can happen. This cannot happen. It's quite possible, you see, that it's not impossible. It's happened in the past and it can happen at present also. That just like the caste Goswamis, they're making a show of being a guru, but they're going around and they talk a little bit about Krishna, but their main aim is to collect some donations and support their family life. So that could happen in ISKCON also, that someone who doesn't have a particularly high spiritual standard, but somehow or other is people recognize as a guru, and they can just go around and pose as a guru and accept donations and maintain their family life, even though if someone has the mystique of being a guru, then they can just be accepted as such, even without qualification. This is why Prabhupada, he wanted to... you'll see, he wrote his books, he preached constantly, because he wanted his followers to understand what is Krishna consciousness according to Shastra, so that we can discriminate between what is real and what is unreal, because there's... Even in the name of Krishna, what to speak of outside the Krishna consciousness movement, there's every possibility of, even within the Krishna consciousness movement, if we're not careful, of something being represented as Krishna consciousness, and it's not. It happened even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that people represented themselves as incarnations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or people, because of some connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, direct or indirect, they advertise themselves as being persons worthy of respect, just like these caste Goswamis, because they were sons of sons of disciplic successors of Nityananda Prabhu. So people thought, he's very respectable, so he should be a guru, qualified or not qualified. So in the same way, people may think, well, someone's a disciple of Prabhupada, and they're chanting Hare Krishna, and they're talking about Krishna, and okay, well, that's enough. But according to Shastra, that's not enough. There's a lot more. Simply to be a disciple of Prabhupada, that in itself is not a qualification to be a guru. It's a qualification. Actually, it's a qualification to be a disciple, but to be a guru, one has to be impeccable, both in behavior, Vaishnav standards, and in repeating the message of Parampara. Both things. That one should speak the message of Krishna as received in Parampara without adding or subtracting. And one should follow the principles as given by... Actually, not. You were asking yesterday, it's not that Prabhupada invented these four regulative principles. It's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is actually to be followed and what isn't, it's pretty clear for those who have clear vision. That clear vision is obtained by hearing regularly in Parampara. Prabhupada gave his books so we can study and we can see what is reality. We should be very careful to follow these books, otherwise people may ask us, as has happened already. People who read these books, sometimes people, I was told this by one devotee in India, that someone asked him, that should I follow what you do, or should I follow what's in your books? Isn't that shameful? That someone, do you understand what they're asking? Should I follow what you are doing, how I see what you're doing, how you behave? Or should I follow what's in your books? There should be no difference between the books and the persons who are supposed to be representing the books. If there's any difference, then the parampara cannot go on. Because parampara means persons who represent the knowledge in the books. There's book Bhagavat and Granta Bhagavat, Shastra Bhagavat. So the book is there, and there are supposed to be persons who live according to the directions in the book and who are able to explain what is in the book also. Just Prabhupada said that if you're distributing the book and if people ask you what's in the book, you have to be able to tell them. So the person Bhagavat who is dared to take the role of representing the knowledge in Parampara must repeat the knowledge in Parampara and must act according to that. And actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said everyone should be a guru. Jare deko tare koha Krishna upadesh amaragge guru hoya taro idesh. By repeating this knowledge in Bhagavad Gita as it is, everyone should become a guru. So actually, all the members of this Krishna consciousness movement are supposed to be gurus, in as much as they're supposed to preach Bhagavad Gita as it is, and not only preach it, but represent that knowledge in their personal lives. So preaching means, first of all, apani achare prabhu jibere shikai, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set the example by personally following, and therefore, through his personal example, he was able to preach Krishna consciousness. So we should all be aware of these points, that if we don't strictly follow the knowledge given in Parampara, both in practice, in our behavior, and in precept, that means in repeating the philosophy as it is, then we may call ourselves followers of Prabhupada, just like in the disciples, the Jat Gosais, the followers of Nityananda, they call themselves the Nityananda Vansha, the family of Nityananda. But only the name is there. There is a Parampara, but there's no substance. It's hollow. Because there is a Parampara of seminal descendants, and there are other Paramparas of disciplic descendants. That means one person gives initiation to someone else, and he gives initiation to someone else, and he gives initiation to someone else. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would say that these are empty, lifeless mantras that they are giving. There's no life. Because the spirit of service to Krishna is not there. That persons are taking the role of being representatives of Nityananda without the spirit of service to Nityananda. They want to, maybe for their own name and fame, or maybe more practical to feed their families, they want to take the role of a spiritual mentor. So we should be careful of this, that devotees should understand what it means to represent, what is the responsibility of representing the parampara. Otherwise, as Prabhupada says here, Bhagavad Gita accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. If we don't give the proper respect to Bhagavad Gita by regularly studying it, trying to understand it and applying it in our lives, then what is the benefit? If we simply have Bhagavad Gita on our bookshelf, but we don't attempt to understand or follow it, then it's a waste of time. And if we, in the name of Bhagavad Gita, preach something else, it's not only a waste of time, then it is utpat. It is a great disturbance in Vaishnav society, because it misleads people into thinking that something which is not bhakti is bhakti. So let us be very careful to stick to the path given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Of course, there may be different opinions of what it means to follow Srila Prabhupada, it's not that everyone who is a follower of Srila Prabhupada is like a stereotype robot, but at the same time there are certain parameters going outside of which would disqualify one as a follower of Srila Prabhupada. Parameters means, again, practice and precept. One should follow four regulated principles, chant a minimum 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, take food offered to Krishna. And in precept, that means that there may be various ways of preaching Krishna consciousness, but the preaching has to be of Krishna consciousness and ultimately based on Shastra. Of course, there may be, for instance, scientific preaching. Through science, one comes to the same conclusion. Even one time, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur met a professor of mathematics and discussed with him in mathematical terms and came to the conclusion of Krishna. Because he was also a great mathematician. You probably didn't know that. You ever heard that? He was a great mathematician. Well, he was a great astrologer, which means he was a great astronomer. And in those days, to be an astrologer or astrologer, you didn't have a computer. You had to do all the calculations by yourself. So these sciences are based on mathematics, actually. So he discussed with him on the basis, using mathematical terms, and then he convinced him about, actually, there is an ultimate truth, which is beyond numbers. And that is Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Yeah. He's a pretty smart guy. He's translating word by word and he's still thinking about it. You know that Goswami Maharaj in Russia? Vaidyanath Prabhu previously? He told me he used to translate lectures, but at the end, his mind was completely empty. He had no idea what he'd been talking about. If you're translating word by word, it's a great achievement. Congratulations. All right, let's see if I can answer your very intelligent question. Yeah. Not eating an apple. That's just symbolic. It's not a very good religion that says that everyone since time immemorial is suffering because some time ago one of our forefathers ate an apple. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, that no intelligent person could accept this proposition. He gave they ate an apple and then people are suffering from time immemorial. So God sent his son and then people killed him. And then because of that, then you can be saved. Not very intelligent.
Anyway,
yeah, go on. Original sin is enviousness of Krishna.
Which party? Why don't you name it? Come on, let's be straightforward.
Mm. Oh, I see, yeah. We never, the no fall theory.
What is about, this is another one to ask them. Probably you're acquainted with some of this, I guess. So what about this enviousness then? We seem to be pure and innocent, and it just happened like this. This is one thing. The other thing I would like to ask, why is there so much anger or enmity against Bhakti Siddhanta from their side?
Why is there so much enmity against Bhakti Siddhanta? Well, he, that's what I was saying. They had an ancestral business of cheating. Their family business was blown to pieces. He was very heavy against them also. I mean, he spoke very strongly, which was considered against Vaishnava. You know, Vaishnava, everyone comes together and they're very humble and they touch each other's feet. And it's like the Gaudiya Vaishnava version of I'm okay, you're okay. So he stood for the truth that the truth is not very much appreciated by people who are trying to avoid it, and it's definitely not appreciated by people who are making a show of representing the truth when they're representing untruth. It's the same thing, you see, Jesus and the, what's they called, the Philistines, the priests. One, what's it called? Pharisees, yeah. So, the truth is never popular in this world. So he exposed that these people are merchants in the name of religion. That most religious leaders in the world, they're simply some kind of religious merchants who they satisfy people's materialistic need to think that they are good and that they're getting some blessings from God. The tendency to cheat in the name of religion is very strong. Just like in Islam or Judaism, it's supposed that you're not supposed to eat any blood. So they drain the animals of blood and eat them. The idea of not eat any blood means you're not supposed to eat any meat. But instead they bleed the animals to death and then eat them. So that tendency to, because they want to feel, I am good. I am a religious person. I'm getting God's blessings. But at the same time, they don't want to follow what God says. They don't want to surrender to Him. They want to become purified. This is where cheating religion comes from. It's a complex psychology by which the conditioned soul rejects the Supreme Personality of God and at the same time makes a show of accepting Him. It's just like love in the material world. It's a show, that's all. So love of God in this material world is also just a show. There's no actual love. So they like to talk of love, but they don't want to understand what it means to actually love. This love is a very cheap word, people. Again, going to Bangladesh. There was one young man when we were there, he went to America and he came back after a year and he was disgusted. He said, these Americans, they're always saying, honey, I love you, I love you, I love you, and then they divorce. So what's this? He said, we never say love, 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 but we never divorce either. So it's easy to say love, I love you. You have to have love. But just saying love doesn't mean, love actually means service, surrender, giving oneself to the other person. Having no personal desire to exploit others. So just to cheaply say love, without making any endeavor to remove the impurities in our heart, which are based on our envy of Krishna, then in the name of love, there'll be envy of others and the tendency to exploit them. What you're asking practically is, why is there, what is the nature of our material condition? It's inconceivable why we should be envious of Krishna. But here we are. We are the proof. That we are here is the proof. Okay, I have to finish now. My time's up. Hare Krishna. As usual, I'm trying to distribute my books here, which are supposed to be, as Prabhupada said, purports on his purports, topics of Krishna. My memories of Srila Prabhupada is now available in Croatian. Many people ask me about how I saw Prabhupada and met him and all these things, so that's there, and various other topics. But I think mostly it's the same people coming to my lecture every day. Is anyone came newly for the first time today? No, same crew. One or two. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for patiently listening to me. And Krishna willing, see you all next year, because I'm going off tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Actually, when people clap, I think maybe I did something wrong. I hope I didn't entertain you.